Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome everyone to another fantastic episode of Waiting for Doom, the world's favouritest Doom Patrol-related podcast. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks. We do emails. Emails come to us. We read them. That's what happens. At waitingfordoom@gmail.com. We're on Facebook, just like everyone else in the world, except for the Amish. And all our episodes are on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com.
Yes, hello. I'm Mike, and you can find me on Twitter at avantgarve. You can also find on Twitter the Sentient Show Twitter account everyone knows and loves, Wilfred, who is at WFDpod. What are we talking about on this week's show, Paul?
A couple of bitchin' Doom Patrol comics, man.
Excellent.
Doom Patrol Volume 1, issues 107, 108, and they're insane. I love it.
They are. They're very wacky. Good. So yeah. Very 60s.
Very 60s. Yeah, no, I think, like, yeah, we'll come to what happens, but it's like the some of the writing got a little bit playful and frisky.
Anyway, how's your week in comics and life and such been, Paul?
Well, you know, every now and again, you got to do a bit of housekeeping with your comics. So I haven't put away comics for about 8 or 9 months.
Wow.
So I would have had a pile of about a dozen.
Okay. Yeah, right.
You can relate.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so I did a bit of sorting out, like, you know, you end up with a weird issue and go, okay, which box should this go in? And, you know, you got to catalogue it, you got to find a little bag for it. So, and I'm a notorious tight ass when it comes to comics. So when I bag a comic, it's usually because I went and unbagged another comic. So, like, I might have my Suicide Squad collection from the 80s, but they're in like one per a bag. And then I'll go, oh, okay, I'll go through and I'll put two issues in a bag. And then I've got a spare bag.
Right.
I do a bit of that. Right. And then I put a couple of new comics in the bag. So I was doing that and had to update my CLZ app.
Mm-hmm.
So I started using that after sometime last year. But, you know, just putting some odd issues away. It gives you a weird feeling of satisfaction,
yeah,
and emptiness at the end when you nothing.
Then you start it all over again.
Well, not as fast as you.
Well, fast is not quite the term. I did essentially the same thing, except I realized after I'd bagged all of mine, which was a bit more than a dozen or so, and stacked them all in their piles of their corresponding comics, I didn't remember to use my version of the CLZ database app. So I'll have to do all that later on, which will be lots of fun. Deary me. And also, yeah, it was a bit of a sad week for me personally with the passing of musical legend Prince. I was a bit upset about that.
I saw that affected you.
It was completely out of nowhere. And then again, he was a very private person anyway. But yeah, it'll be a few weeks before the official reason behind his passing is revealed to the world, I guess. And it'll be interesting because, of course, there's theories floating around online and everyone's wondering what the hell happened to him. So we will hopefully hear something soon. But yeah, that was a bit of a shock for me.
I perhaps feel a little bit old to be a Prince fan, a real hardcore Prince fan. When David Bowie passed, it's not like I went, oh, I love David Bowie, I should go and get all his music. I had all his music. With Prince, it was like, oh, yeah, he had some really good songs. I wouldn't mind having a few of them. Like, I think I've got Raspberry Beret on my on my phone. But, that's sad.
So, that led me to spend the last weekend watching all three of Prince's films as well, which was interesting.
Yeah, discover why two of them aren't particularly well known, or
Yes. Mike's very brief movie ratings, Purple Rain still the best. Under the Cherry Moon, actually not so bad. It had some funny moments in there, maybe a little bit too long for what it is. Graffiti Bridge, holy crap, avoid it like the plague. It's so bad. It even says in the end credits that it was filmed at Paisley Park Studios, and you can tell it was all done on a soundstage because it feels like a 90-minute film clip with maybe, I don't know, a grand total of 20 seconds of actual exterior footage of him riding on his motorbike with, you know, an attractive young girl on the back of the bike with him. Yeah, it's... that one was dreadful. So there's my recommendations for his films. And then because I was wide awake at 2 a.m. on Sunday, I decided that I would watch the Star Wars saga in machete order.
When you say the Star Wars saga, you're talking the movies, is that right?
Yes, yes. So I watched episodes 2 to 6. Well, 4, 5, 2, 3, 6 is machete order. I decided to not watch episode 7 because I'd only just watched the Blu-ray the week before. And plus, it was like 1:30 in the afternoon by the time I'd finished them all. And I was well and truly ready for bed.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was. I don't think I want to watch a Star Wars film again for quite some time. I think I'm all Star Wars. I mean, still love them to bits. But, yeah, I was sort of so full of soft drink by the time I staggered to bed, I was like jittery.
I think I said to my wife, and was it Sunday? I think Mike's been up all night.
Yep.
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 So I was looking at your Twitter, and it sounds like you're doing very silly things.
Yes, yes, very silly things. Not sleeping since Friday night.
God. It doesn't count without the holiday special and Caravan and Courage, you know that.
Oh, man, I don't even own those.
Wow.
Oh, good God. Never again. Anyway, hey, listen, that's ticking I can hear.
Ticking?
Yes.
That's novel.
Something different, isn't it? Yes. Blumenick, it's the Doom Clock. So looking at the face of the mighty Doom Clock, it's still telling us that the last issue of the Doom Patrol book we had was issue 22 of volume 5 from the Giffen Clark run. That was cover dated July 2011, going on sale May 4th of that same year. So it's 4 years and 51 weeks since the last Doom Patrol book.
Hang on, aren't there like 52 weeks in a year?
There are, Paul. There are.
So that means it's almost 3 years.
Yeah, that's how we tell time here in Australia, incorrectly. No, next week will be the 5th anniversary, Paul.
Oh, hang on. Did I 20 minutes ago just say the wrong amount of years?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm lost now. Anyway, the last appearance of the team was just over 9 months ago in All-Star Section 8, Issue 3, and Justice League United, number 12. And we should also give a special honourable mention to last week's Legends of Tomorrow, Issue 2, because it actually had an appearance by Robot Man, and he got to hang out with the Metal Men. They kind of wanted to hide his secluded cabin in the middle of nowhere. So, that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was pointed out to us by Doug Zavisha, Martin Gray, Sergeant Merica. I think a couple of other people might have told us. Very kind, everybody.
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
Well done.
But this week in Doom Patrol history, back in 1988, for a measly dollar American, you could get issue 11 of Doom Patrol Volume 2 from Kupperberg and Larson. This issue was titled Betrayed by Larry Trainer and featured the return of Gargoax and Larry's scheme to regain the negative energy with the help of Reactron. And yes, if this sounds very familiar, we discussed this storyline only recently, about a month ago, back in episode 47.
Wow.
And that was a good one. So yeah, you can listen to that for more details on that.
Good on us.
Yes. Well done for us. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Sweet. Time for Doomsplaining again on Waiting for Doom. And this week on Doomsplaining, we're looking at Doom Patrol Volume 1's issue 107 and 108. And these, they came out in November 1966 and December 1966, according to the cover dates. But in real life, in the comic shops in America, not in Australia, I'd say it was September 1st, 1966 and October 20th, 1966. Okay. And they were 12 cents.
Nice.
Nice. Lovely.
Tidy.
Both were edited by Murray Boldenoff, and both were written by Arnold Drake, and both were drawn by Bruno Premiani. So that's pretty straightforward.
Easy.
All right, take us through number 107. Thanks, matey.
Number 107. Well, the cover of it has a very interesting looking, I want to say witch doctor looking villain, standing atop a building with Beast Boy sort of in a jar that we can see him in, and Mento facing off against this witch doctor thing, and the patrol sort of in the background on the balcony of another building. And it tells us, beginning, it started as a local rumble, but soon the whole world would be hurled into the war over Beast Boy.
Dun dun dun.
Can't remember Beast Boy ever being quite that important. But anyway,
yeah.
And
it's a little bit of a misrepresentation. Anyway,
a little bit, yes. It's more like the murmurings of a possible war over Beast Boy. But anyway, as we dive into the issue, we see that there's a gigantic, funky 60s-looking robot attacking the city, and he, as he's crushing cars and, you know, terrifying the humans, he's telling them that, know that I am Ultimax. You know, he's got the power of all knowledge locked within his computers, and that, you know, you humans shall be the servants, and I, Ultimax, the master. And, you know,
if and the most of driest and absorbent pad there is.
He's got this look about him that makes me think that that's what Wilfred would look like, kind of, if Wilfred ever got a body. You know, nothing to worry about there. So the police, they're trying to stop Ultimax, and they sneak up behind him, and they're going to push a statue onto Ultimax from behind him. But Ultimax is too quick for them. He spins around, and he makes the statue disappear with his fantastic laser beams. And we realize that the patrol are actually watching all this unfold on a reel-to-reel camera.
A projector.
So on a projector. On a kind of giant screen. So, yes. And the chief has devised that, you know, no matter how large today's computers can only act at human command. And he's devised a little gizmo. It's actually going to block the radio signals that he believes are controlling Ultimax. We then cut to the home of Steve Mento Dayton, and he's giving his detective a bit of a verbal thrashing because he's asked his detective to find dirt on Nicholas Galtry, who's the current guardian of Beast Boy. And obviously Rita and Steve are keen to take Beast Boy under their own wing and adopt him. But the detective has basically turned up nothing, and every business person he goes to talk to that's linked to Galtry refuses to cooperate and give any information at all. And we actually see some interesting panels where Galtry's on the phone and he's basically blackmailing all these other business people and these rather well-to-do financial types. There's even a Lord Brisbane there, which was a bit interesting. It's not often you see that word in an American comic from the 60s. For those who don't know, I live in a city called Brisbane. There you go.
A real city, apparently.
Not like Paris. We then cut away again to a TV studio where there's a Western show being filmed, and we're about to see two cowboys get into a fight. But who comes crashing through the wall but Ultimax, the giant computer, and he scares all the actors away. And one of them has a hilarious line where one of the actors says, I'm not going to fight it. And the other actor says, you and me both. It's uglier than my agent and stronger than my wife. cracked me up.
I want to call shenanigans on this because this is a TV studio and it's like on the sixth floor of a building.
Yeah.
No, that's bullcrap. Crap, right? Little bullcrap. TV studios are always on the ground floor of buildings because you have to bring in all the equipment. You have to bring in the soundstage stuff. You have to roll things in and out all the time. So they're always on the ground floor.
What if they have service elevators, though?
Bullcrap.
look, let's agree to disagree on that. I'm quite content and happy with Ultimax climbing up the possibly sixth floor to get to this TV studio. I don't quite know why he does that. But anyway, it's possibly because...
You may be right, but you're not.
Right, okay. We'll have words later, mister. The cameras are left running, though, and Ultimax is basically broadcasting his message that, you know, humanity is doomed, you feeble things of blood and tissue, your day has passed, ours has but begun, the day of the living computers. Again, makes me think of Wilfred. But this time, Robot Man and Negative Man are on the scene. They've turned up with the Chief's little invention, hoping to jam the radio signals that will stop Ultimax from working, but it fails. It doesn't do anything. And Ultimax grabs down with one of his giant claws and crushes the little gadget. So what does Robot Man do? He starts headbutting Ultimax's body with a mighty clang. Cliff. But then Ultimax grabs him. So Negman releases a negative energy being and he launches into Ultimax. Doesn't really do much, unfortunately, other than cause Ultimax to drop Cliff to the floor. And we then realize that Steve and Rita have been watching all this unfold on their TV back at the Dayton Mansion. And Rita takes off. Of course, Steve isn't pleased by this at all. And she embiggens herself so she can quickly run across town to where the action's taking place. We got back to the studio, and Ultimax is basically stopping Negman's energy being dead cold by covering it with liquid lead. And he kind of looks like a very thin paper figure, the way he's kind of all curled up as the lead covers him.
Well, Negative Man energy being is pretty flat.
True. Yeah.
Flat. So, it's a flat thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No. Okay. I won't call bullcrap on that like some people would about other things. Anyway, Rita comes bursting through the wall that Ultimax created the hole in when he came in before, and she basically grabs him and takes a fight outside whilst Cliff is trying to figure out how the hell he can save the negative being, and using his chest-bound TV communicator, the Chief says to him, basically grab a cable from one of the TVs and use yourself as a living conduit to melt the lead. Of course.
Good thinking.
Yeah, quick thinking. As they head off to join Rita outside, she's almost got the upper hand on Ultimax, but he spins around and sprays her in the face with this mysterious gas. Don't you hate mysterious gases? That's what caught Rita in this situation in the first place. And suddenly she starts shrinking against her own will. She can't control her body. And she's shrinking so quickly that Cliff sticks his hands out to try and grab her. But even as she lands in his hands, she keeps shrinking till basically there's a pop and she's vanished into his hand.
Oh.
Which is a bit different.
Mm.
So they head back to the HQ and the Chief's trying to figure out what the hell's going on. And he's pretty certain that she hasn't been obliterated. He says there would have been an explosion greater than an H-bomb if that had happened. But she has to be alive. But the question is, where is she? And we start to zoom in on Cliff's finger on his hand. And we move closer and closer into the metal atoms in his body. We go closer still, and we're transported to this bizarre, barren, primitive, I want to say fantasy world, where Rita is suddenly captured by some primitive-looking warriors. I want to say primitive and all balding.
Yeah.
They've kind of got the mullets.
Side mullets.
Side mullets. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. Bald on top, but some fancy side mullets.
Now, is your copy in color?
No, it's not, unfortunately.
I don't know what color these dudes are.
Mm.
But they talk about her as a pale skin. So.
Yes, so we'll have to research that later. I'm going to guess that maybe they're, I don't know, a bright yellow or something.
Could be red.
Could be red, yeah. We'll find out. We'll research after. Should have done
could
it beforehand.
Could be a nice taupe.
Could be puce. But these warriors, they immediately suspect Rita, this pale-skinned stranger, as being a spy sent to their land of Zaraka, and she's a spy for some group called the Mowglis, or Mowglis. Let's say Mowglis. And for this treacherous act, she's going to die. And Rita's completely confused, doesn't know what the hell's going on. And she tries to get away, but they, you know, zap the ground in front of her with some magical stick they have. And, yeah, she's in a bit of trouble. So back in the real world, the chief's using some gigantic contraptions to zoom in on Cliff's hand and see all the radiation in there. And he thinks, yep, that's what's happened. He's figured out that Rita is basically within Cliff's hand, although tiny, very tiny. We then cut away to see Beast Boy having a bit of a snack on the lounge, with Galtry yelling at him to shut up and answering the phone as it suddenly rings. And he has this phone conversation with someone called Abu Hallam, who's a dark and mysterious figure, saying, you know, don't worry, Mr. Galtry, I'm on your side. I'll make sure, you know, no one cooperates with the detective that Dayton sent to dig dirt onto you. And as he steps out of the shadows and puts his phone down, where he sees that this is the witch doctor looking figure that's on the cover. Very strange. Back at Doom Patrol HQ, just because he's clearly got the time, Chief has recreated the diagram of Ultimax's inner workings. I don't know how he did it so quickly. And he said there's not sufficient space inside of Ultimax to hide even a newborn infant. So there can't be anyone inside of it. And if it's not radio signals that's commanding Ultimax, what's directing the robot? The chief says, I don't know. And because I don't, I've failed Rita.
Yeah.
Damn it, Chief. And we cut back to the magical mystery land of Zaraka, where...
The tiny, tiny, tiny land.
Tiny land of Zaraka.
On cliff sand.
And Rita is brought before the king of the people that...
Toxino.
Sorry?
His name is Toxino.
I thought it was King Dax.
Oh, didn't they call him Toxino on a few pages?
Well, the guy beside him, Wadja the Wise.
Wadja the Wise?
Wadja the Wise says, Dax.
He's a rapist. He's a wobber and a rapist.
Oh, my goodness. So basically, the royal court of Zaraka have decreed that Rita is indeed a spy, and she's going to be put to death.
Yeah.
Of course, Rita's not too thrilled about that. And back in the real world, Steve Dayton wakes up and he gets a phone call from his detective, and he says, he's over in Europe, I've tried everything, but these bankers won't cooperate against Galtry. We're never going to get enough proof to prove that, you know, he's a thieving, evil crook. And that's what's going to get Beast Boy away from Galtry and into their safe house. So Mento turns over in his bed to give Rita the news, and she's not there.
Whoops.
Of course, he's furious, and he says, I'm going to see the chief. And he rocks up in his oh-so-fancy costume with its giant collar and its big white Mento helmet. And Chief's trying to say, look, calm down. I'll tell you how you can help us get Rita back. We've just tracked Ultimax to a shipyard. And we see Cliff and Negman hauling a giant anchor, which, of course, they use to swing and strike at Ultimax, which actually looks kind of effective. And as the fight breaks out, Larry jumps up and actually manages to activate the trigger in one of Ultimax's claws that shot out the gas before. And he's got, I want to say it's a balloon, but it looks like a big rubbish bag. And that inflates with all the gas. Because what they're going to do is take it back and study it back at the headquarters and figure out a way to reverse engineer a rescue method to save Rita. But of course, the fight's going badly for Cliff and Negman. They're getting whomped by Ultimax. So Mento turns up just in time to save the day, using the powers of his Mento helmet to vibrate Ultimax to the point where he can't hold on to the guys anymore, and he drops them to the ground. But at that point, Ultimax takes off, and the three guys are there arguing amongst themselves, and they're saying, look, we have to do the right thing. Let's get this gas back to Chief so he can investigate it and we can do something about Rita.
I didn't know Mento had vibrator powers.
No, I didn't either. Maybe it's Mark II of the Mento helmet. It looks the antennae on it look a little bit different. So,
maybe that's what Rita sees in him.
Oh my god! And as we close this part of the story, we see that Abu Hallam, with his big witch doctor mask, is looking over the stock market ticker tape machine. And while Dayton's businesses are putting the squeeze on Gultry's financial associates, Abu Hallam is actually pumping more money into their businesses, so it doesn't really have any effect on them anyway. So that's a little bit strange. And Chief has figured out how to use the shrinking gas. So he's got Mento in a giant glass cage, and he's clearly going to shrink Mento down. And the final panel shows Rita being confronted by the King of Zaraka. And she thinks he's going to come and kill her right there and then as her executioner. But he says, no, I've come to save you if you'll be my queen. That's, there's so much going on there. This issue also has a continuation of the backup story, The Private World of Negative Man, which we last saw in issue 106. This chapter's called The Race Against Dr. Death. It's a little bit odd because Negman decides that in order to support his parents, who he's now living with, he needs to go out and find a job. He has a few setbacks and...
Hey, that's good that he wants to, you know, not live with his mum.
He gets an offer to meet with someone called a Dr. Drew, who looks so ghastly and horrible that...
So bloody Skeletor.
Yeah. Negman nicknames him Dr. Death. Yeah. And it seems that Dr. Death is working on a special power ray that will protect the Earth from alien invaders. But Negman discovers that what he's actually planning to do is have the energy ray collapse in on the Earth if his demands aren't met. And Negman, doing the right thing, decides to foil this plot and discovers Dr. Death has actually set it in motion. So Negman flies around the world, basically dismantling the whole operation, and basically says, screw you, Dr. Death. And he walks off, you know, into the city looking sad after all that. So, but what do you think of that one, Paul?
The backup, I was pretty surprised that the guy looks like Skeletor turned out to be a baddie. that one came from left field. I didn't see that coming. Yeah. And the whole issue in general, I love that Ultimax is just raving the whole time about how superior, you know, robots are to humans, and you know. And you've also got Abu Hallam, who seems to know a lot about the Doom Patrol. You know, and Ultimax seems very ready to fight the Doom Patrol. There's something suspicious about those two.
Do you think so?
I do. Yes. And I think the Rita being shrunk and finding this, you know, civilization, you know, subatomic on Cliff's hand, and I love that the Chief pulls his hand off so he can, you know, keep the hand contained, and Cliff has to go get another hand. But I mean, this highlights the fight in the studio where Rita basically pulls Ultimax out, and Ultimax is probably, you know, a couple of stories tall, and she just grabs him upside down and starts shaking him and then gasses her. So
It was a lot of good fun. It was kind of zany, and there was lots going on. But it was good fun, and it's cool to see Rita, well, being forced to shrink, I guess, because we rarely see her using that side of her powers. Normally, she's always embiggening herself.
Yeah,
but yeah, it was good fun.
Yeah, and there's throughout this issue, there's a bit of cheekiness in some of the captions. It says, meanwhile, at the home of Steve Mento Dayton, world's fifth richest blowtop. The intro says, add to that a pair of the wildest villains ever, and you've jumped into the dooziest, dilliest, ding-dong DP nightmare of them all.
Like I said, so very 60s.
Yeah. I think they've been reading some of Bob Haney's comics and trying to keep up.
That's probably fun. Yeah. So yes. it was good fun. But yes, Paul, take us into issue 108.
108. Yes. So this one, we have a nice cover of it's very it's a bit like a romance comic, except you've got Beast Boy having a cry on the cover because the Doom Patrol are dead, and then around him you can see Cliff's been sort of half dismantled, take a drink. Larry's collapsed, take a drink. And Rita looks a bit stoned. I don't know what's happened there.
That mystery gas again.
Yeah, but Beast Boy is sad. So anyway, let's get into it. And we see that back at where we've picked up where the action came from. And this comic is called Kid Disaster. Yeah, so Mento is shrinking in this glass canister. He gets small, and then we see that Rita has been it's the king's job. This one-eyed king guy, the guy with the eye patches, has to kill her. So he takes her a ride in a little sort of gondola thing across the lake to hide from everybody because he wants to marry her.
Mm.
Who can blame her? Him.
Yes.
Who can blame him? Yes. And then he says, no one will follow me across here because they'll all be afraid. And she's like, afraid of what? And he says, oh, don't worry. Just as she's getting out of this boat, this giant dinosaur comes out of the lake and attacks him. And it's called the Horga.
Mm.
Mm. And, he gets he tries to stab the Horga's head because it's got a lump on its head where its heart is, apparently. Interesting. Comic book biology.
New field of study.
Yeah, but he gets whacked on his ass and gets knocked out. And then Rita embiggens herself, so she's got the embiggening power back. And she goes and fights this dinosaur and starts swinging around her leg. It hits her in the head, but she picks it up and lobs it. And then she starts shrinking and losing the power to embiggen herself. And then she feels really dazed, and she sees a swirling sort of nightmarish image of Mento and Robot Man, as well as the Horga dinosaur thing. And she comes to, and the king with the eye patch is kneeling over her, and he's saying, oh, I'm so glad that you, you're okay, you didn't drown. And she said, yeah, I saved you. And he's going, oh, you a woman? Saved me? That's ridiculous. I was unconscious. I don't know, but that could never be. Yeah, she attracts the sexist pigs, doesn't she?
Oh, boy, does she ever.
Meanwhile, Watcher the Wise has become suspicious that the king took Rita off to a cave rather than execute her on the spot. So he's got some tracking Jika bird, which is like a bit of a Flintstones bird, on a lead. And Steve is lurking nearby and hears this, and he, using his Mento helmet, can understand the language. Okay. So he follows them, the Jika bird, and he uses his mental powers to fly across the water where the Horga attacked.
I find it interesting that Risa could automatically understand the Zarakan people, but Steve needed his Mento helmet.
Yeah, that occurred to me, but I ignored it because it was going to slow down this retelling of the story. So,
excuse me.
Yeah. Anyway, Wodger the Wise is very keen on killing Rita, but he's also keen on killing the king because he reckons the king has betrayed them. And the guard that's with him is like, hey, no, don't kill the king. And Wodger the Wise kills him with his ray spear.
Ooh.
Looks like a spear, shoots like a ray. Interesting. Yeah. And then he starts shooting at the shoreline where Rita and the king are. And then Mento arrives and he's knocked out the Wodger the Wise. And he rescues them. And Rita's quite happy to see him, to be fair. And then the king is like really sad that he's going to have to say goodbye to Rita. And he says, can I keep your headband as a memento?
It's kind of sweet, I guess.
Yeah, they need to have a panel of him sniffing it or something at the end just to make it super creepy.
Right.
Anyway. Mento says, quick, breathe this gas. And he's talking about how weird the king is. And Reed says, oh, shut up and keep breathing. So they're like an old married couple already.
Already, yeah.
And they both expand into giant size and leave this subatomic little realm. And then everyone's sitting around the headquarters and they're talking about the problem of Ultimax and how Ultimax is always ahead of them and Ultimax can't be controlled by radio waves. And they keep going, it's like it has a brain or something. Anyway, Mento's on the phone. He's using his fifth richest man in the world powers to take down Galtry. So he wants everyone to betray Galtry, and you know, but he's having heaps of trouble and no one is talking. No one's rolling over on Galtry. And then he hears that all his attempts to squeeze these money men have been thwarted by a guy called Abu Halam. So he says, okay, I'm going to go to Switzerland personally and sort this guy out. So he gives Rita a kiss, jumps in his plane, and then we see that Cliff and Larry have found Ultimax again by tracking radio waves. And it's in like an art gallery, modern art everywhere, and Ultimax starts attacking them with a giant hammer. Cliff retaliates by shoving a painting over his head, kicks him in the face. Ultimax pulls out a giant magnet, which immediately incapacitates Cliff. Why doesn't it incapacitate Ultimax? I don't understand. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Okay. And Ultimax starts to gloat and removes the top of his head to show a brain inside and confirms that it is the brain from the Brotherhood of Evil. What? Larry is downstairs and he's coming up the stairs and he is confronted by Garguax on the stairway.
Good God.
Yeah, and he launches his negative being at Garguax, who sucks him into like a negative man vacuum cleaner that he has. And then, Larry's body sort of weakly crawls up the stairs trying to be reunited with the negative energy, and Garguax uses that to trap him in a coffin with a whole lead coffin and fires the negative energy back into the coffin once Larry's inside. And his plastic men appear and they carry Cliff on the big magnet and Larry in the big coffin away. Steve Dayton, meanwhile, has arrived in Switzerland and is face to face with Mr. Abu Halam.
Mm-hmm.
And Abu Halam is standing mysteriously in the corner, and then he whips around and whips off his mask and says, it's Monsieur Mallard. Halam is Mallard backwards.
Ah, it is too. I literally only just realized that now.
Wow. I literally realized the first time I read it.
Wow. Okay.
Anyway, and he's gloating. Like, yes, and he's used his intelligence that the brain gave him to create a financial empire. So, yes. Anyway, Mento... pushes a button on his suitcase and his helmet pops up. It's all floppy and flat. And it lands on his head and he starts blasting it. Mallard. Mallard does a great like body slam with his butt. Yeah. On top of it. You know, this is a gorilla jumping on a human being. That would kill a human being.
It would. Yeah.
But Mento just goes, oof! And then he blasts Mallard in the gut, and then Mallard grabs a typewriter and tries to hit him, and Mento blast the typewriter, but the desk lamp, it's actually a sonic weapon, and Mallard grabs that and starts shooting Mento with sonics, and then he whacks a great big helmet on top of Mento's other helmet to lock him in his head. This is bad.
The team's not doing well at all. No.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So Rika has decided not to sit at home and wait for her husband to sort things out. So she's racing to the airport in her car, and she's going to confront Dr. Hallam, and she gets on the plane and the stewardess welcomes her aboard, and she's sitting there and playing with her vanity because she's going to do some makeup, as women are wont to do. And yeah, and then she drops it upward. Yeah, and it smashes into the passenger's face next to her, knocks his head off, and she finds that all the passengers on the plane are mannequins.
Mm-hmm.
Creepy, that's weird. Right. And then the stewardess reveals that she is Madame Rouge of the Brotherhood of Evil. The shape-shifting, stretchy woman.
Yes.
And, yes, Rita embiggens herself, tries to slap her. She gets out of the way, turns into a bowling ball, and rolls down the aisle towards Rita. Rita embiggens herself and jumps out of the way. But then they pump gas through the plane's air vents. Gas is Rita's kryptonite, isn't it?
It really is.
Again with the gas. Rita needs a gas mask. That's what I would get Rita. Anyway. Then we get an interlude with Beast Boy chatting up a girl called Jill at school.
Mm-hmm.
And some jock comes up and says, you know, starts calling him a head of lettuce and being rude because he's green. Mm-hmm. So he challenges. Sorry, a cat just attacked a pile of comics next to me. That's never happened before. Anyway, so yes, so Gar challenges this jock to a race, and the loser has to eat some sweat socks.
Mm. Yes. Of course.
Yes, so they have a race, and this is weird. It's like a four-page interlude where they have a race, and Gar turns into a rabbit and runs ahead, and then he, you know, he's relaxing on the grass when the guy runs past, and then he turns into a bird and gets ahead of this guy, and the guy has a tantrum, and Gar leaves holding hands with Jill while this guy is literally eating sweat socks.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, you're right. It's a really weird interlude.
It's a weird story placement. It's like, anyway, then we see that Chief has called up Gar and says, quick, I need your help because the Doom Patrol have been captured. And we see Rita all strapped to a pole.
Settle down.
Mento is chained up, manacled from the ceiling with his great big helmet on his head, a new helmet covering his proper helmet.
Mm-hmm.
Cliff is stuck to the magnet and Larry's in the coffin, and the Doom Patrol are in dire straits.
Mm.
But Chief has a plan. He says, we can go to this rocket that I have that will get us across the world to wherever they are. France, usually, isn't it?
Usually, yeah.
Yeah, anyway. So there's a missile. It opens a hatch in some public parkland.
Of course.
Under a fountain. And then they race off. And then, yes, we see inside that Gar has a helmet on. It flies around the Earth very quickly. And yeah, the brain has says, hey, Gargarex, release them all. So everyone's released and they all run to attack Gargarex. And then he blasts them with a ray. And they're going, this is awesome, letting them go and then blasting them again.
It's pretty evil.
They're being real dicks.
Yeah.
I mean, you can be evil and form a brotherhood. You don't have to be a dick about it.
Yeah, anyway. It's not the brotherhood of dicks.
No. And plus, there's a Madame Rouge's in the brotherhood of dicks.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Brother sisterhood of the traveling dicks. Anyway.
Anyway.
Anyway, Beast Boy arrives and he walks in the room and the Doom Patrol are just sprawled everywhere. And he's, oh no, they're dead. And he says, Chief, can you see? And Chief's back watching it on the big monitor. And but Gar starts to cry. And Chief, he's like, I have to accept it. The Doom Patrol, dead. And this story is too big, so we're going to end it there. So, so what do you think of that one, Mike?
I love that issue. It's just it continues on with the zaniness from the first one, then the big reveal that it's a brotherhood behind it all anyway, and some of the art in this is just fantastic. Like when Madame Rouge appears and she's changing her face from the flight attendant and fighting Rita. Rita herself looks gorgeous in some of these panels. Yep. Like back when Steve is rescuing her from Zaraka, there's some great art of her there. It's just such a great issue.
Yeah. There's forced perspectives too, like when Cliff smashes through the skylight, his legs are so big, and when Mento grabs the Chief and shakes him and all this sort of stuff. And these captions continue. Like we've got on one page, it says, when the Cliff and Larry on top of this warehouse, it says, then at a meeting of the International Roof Walkers Club DP division. Yeah, and it describes Steve Dayton's living room as shortly it's Steve's mansion, a sort of indoor version of the Grand Canyon. So these are just scattered throughout. They're hilarious.
Yeah. And I do love that big panel when Chief calls on Beast Boy to finally come and help save the team. And we see the team all incapacitated in different ways. Yes, with Rita strapped up to a pole, and Cliff on the giant magnet, and Mento, you know, with the metal helmet covering his entire head and chained up, and Negman locked in the lead coffin. That's such a great image right there too.
Yeah. And it says, on the next page, it says, when it cuts back to the Brotherhood of Evil's lair, it says, meanwhile, at Satan's branch office. Like, they just stopped giving a crap about being sensible at this point. It's awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, it ends on quite the cliffhanger there too.
Yeah. And I mean, what's better than the Brotherhood of Evil? The Brotherhood of Evil with Gargurax.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But quite a svelte Gargurax, I must admit. He's not as Eric Larson proportioned.
No,
I'm not saying Eric Larson is a big fat man.
It was like
the way he drew Gargurax. Yes,
20 something years between that. You know, dude could have bulked up, eaten a lot in that time.
22 years, 66, 88. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So understandable. But yeah, it's such a fun issue, that one, and just such a crazy fun story. So much going on, and I love the way the Brotherhood reveal themselves. Like, Ultimax starts taking apart part of his own head, and there's a brain underneath it. And the look on Monsieur Malar's face when he takes off the voodoo mask, and it's, it's me, Malar. And he's got this gigantic, almost idiotic grin on his face.
Yeah, it's a really playful comic, and it's very self-aware, and you know, it's having lots of fun.
Yeah,
all the way through. I mean, everything is ludicrous and crazy.
But yeah, in a much more fun and, dare I say, enjoyable way than some of the ludicrous, crazy stuff that happens in later runs of the Patrol, which is what I love about this team, that we've gone from wild and wacky shenanigans in these two issues to, you know, the dark and over-emotional, angsty stuff in Morrison's stuff, you know, with still essentially the same team. It's why I love the Doom Patrol. They're so cool.
They are cool.
Mm.
We should do a podcast about it.
Let's.
And we did, and that's how we got here today.
The end.
Sorry. Okay. Mailbag ado time.
Let's do it.
And when the evening comes, we smile.
In 1994, Mark Waid, Brian Augustine, and Barry Kitson began exploring the beginnings of the world's greatest superhero team over an epic 12-issue comic maxi series.
And yes, we've just begun.
That team was the Justice League of America, and that comic was JLA Year One. In 2016, 8 podcasts will come together to cover this series in a single month. That month is JL May. Featuring the Fire and Water Podcast, The Power of Fishnets, Waiting for Doom, The Lantern Cast, Supermates Podcast, The Idlehead of Diabolu, Comic Reflections, and Views from the Long Box. Each podcast will cover one or two issues of JLA Year One, and then coverage will move from show to show. It all starts in the Fire and Water Podcast with issues 1 and 2.
Yes, we've just begun.
JL May, an epic month for an epic series. Available where you find all good podcasts.
Last week we asked everybody, what's your favorite nickname in comics? And did we hear from some people? We did. That was good. That made this segment much more interactive.
Yes.
So we heard from Martin Gray, who's at Martin Gray, and he said, the Big Red Cheese, because it makes no sense. How is Captain Marvel a cheese?
Because I believe there was some discussion about, because he's kind of cheesy. He's a bit of a Boy Scout. Because
he's really good.
Oh, God. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Wow. We then heard from Moby One at Shmoby One on Twitter, and his answer was the Malleable Mallard, nickname of Rubber Duck, from Bird Rentals, Captain Carrot. And that always made Moby smile. And I must admit, I've never seen Rubber Duck before, so I obviously have not read much Captain Carrot stuff, but he looks kind of cool.
I haven't read the classic Captain Carrot. I did read a terrible update of Captain Carrot in that comic Threshold.
Yes.
Yeah. But less said about that, the better.
Yes. Next.
We heard from Jefferson from Texas, who said, Princess Sparkle Fists.
Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers. Yes.
Oh, is it? Oh, yes. Okay.
Because when she fires up all her superpowers, her fists sparkle.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. We then heard from at Ostrakus One, who this week is Wick Ment Vale there. Hello, Kevin. And he said, I've always thought shortening Spider-Man to Spidey was really endearing.
Yeah.
Spidey's cool.
Spidey's cool. I like the shortenings, like Supes.
Yep.
Bats.
Wandy.
Spidey. Anyway, we have from FKA Jason, who does the Silver and Gold podcast, the Captain Atom Booster Gold podcast.
Hey, Jason.
And the FKA is formerly known as, it's from his old nickname from his youth. Anyway.
Right.
And he said, I always liked it when Guy Gardner called Cap Marvel the Big Red Cheese.
Mm.
And called him Captain White Bread as well, if I remember.
Did he?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. I like that even more. We heard from Astrakus One again, who said, also worth a mention, Wolverine always calling Nightcrawler Elf. Yeah, I like that too. Elf or Fuzzy Elf. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Because he's blue fur.
Okay. Yes, yeah. That makes sense.
And he's pointy knees.
We heard from Ryan Daly at Ryan Daly 01. The insane podcaster. He said, I always like Scott Summers' nickname Slim for some reason, probably because it had nothing to do with superpowers.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he was a slim build of a guy, I guess. Maybe that's it. But yeah, nothing to do with his Cyclops powers at all. So, yeah. We then had a tweet from Ange at Dr. Ange 70. And he said, you know, I totally neglect Marvel in these things. I already answered, but I hope someone says Shellhead. Iron Man.
Hang on, Ange hasn't answered yet. What's going on?
Mysteries.
We heard from Aaron Moss, Headcast Network. You were just a guest on Aaron's Task Force.
I was. Podcast.
Yeah, you talked about the Doom Patrol. You did a good job. I understand the Doom Patrol much more than I did before, now that I've listened to you talk about the Doom Patrol. And that was an entertaining show. Ryan Bloody Daly was on that show too.
Oh, right.
Ryan, I can't keep off your podcast daily. Anyway, Aaron said, I personally enjoy Boomer Butt over in the Suicide Squad. Captain I do like the name Boomer Butt. Yep.
I don't think I'd ever seen or heard that one before.
Oh, it's all through that. It's delivered with much contempt because no one likes Captain Boomerang.
It's because he's Australian, isn't it? They're all racist to Australians.
No, bloody Australians. Yeah. Or bloody foreigners. I don't know. What am I saying? Move on.
We heard from Frack.
Frack.
Frack of the Endless at Fractures.
Oh, what brings you to the question of the week, Frack?
Probably his answer of Elf. Nightcrawler's nickname coined by Logan.
Nice.
Another one for Elf.
And we heard over on the Facebook, that's weird, we heard from Jacob Edwards, who said, Adam, Tiny Titan and Mighty Might, Orc-Man, Winged Wonder.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Thanks, Jacob. I think that's the first one we've ever had from Jacob, too.
Nice. Hey, Jacob.
Hey, Jacob.
Hey.
And getting back to Ange once again, yes, we actually did get another answer from him. He sent an email through to us. Woohoo! We love getting emails.
We do.
And Ange said, just a quick email. I always liked the issue of Doom Patrol, number 46, as it was a sort of much-needed breather, given all that it had come before. It mostly set up some upcoming plots, but I found the Cliff and Jane stuff really powerful. I can remember wondering about Number None. The ultimate explanation is perfect. I battle Number None to this day. That'll make more sense once we get to that. He then goes on... Also wanted to say that I really enjoyed the Hawk and Dove series Paul is rereading. You might even find my name in some of the letter columns. I enjoyed the chaos and order idea of the team, and Kestrel was a solid arch nemesis. As for the nicknames questions, that's a tough one. I like Man of Tomorrow for Superman. I like Made of Might for Supergirl. Of course he does. But my favorite, mostly because it is so inane, is Domino Daredoll. Something they called Batgirl in her earliest adventures. I don't know if either of those words actually exist. Therefore, perfect comic book nickname.
Wow.
Well, I would assume it's in part referencing her... Well, I was going to say the domino mask she wore over her eyes, but she had more like a cow thing, didn't she?
Yeah, well, yeah. I don't know.
Very odd.
But I had a little chat with Ange offline on Twitter, and I know his real name from the letter column of Hawk and Dove now. So Ange is actually a sobriquet. Is that what you say? Sobriquet? A pet name? A pet name? No.
A lie. Well,
it's bullcrap, yeah.
Oh, dearie me. What about you, Paul? What's your favourite nickname from comics?
I really like The Dark Knight just because I came to it through comics. So when I first started reading Detective Comics and Batman, it was like, oh, they call him The Dark Knight. That's cool. And I'd never heard it before. But, I mean, I always wanted a nickname. Like, I worked at a place where there were so many people called Paul that everyone started just calling me Hicksie.
Right.
So, you know, because my surname is Hicks, and so I became Hicksie. But I always wanted to be called Flanger.
Is there a story behind Flanger?
It's just cool. Wouldn't you love to be called Flanger? Hey, here comes Flanger. What about you, Mike? Have you got a nickname?
Me personally, or the nickname in response to the question?
Both.
I don't really have a nickname. I don't think I've ever actually had one. Partly because I went to an all-boys school in high school and everyone was just referred to by their surname, by all the teachers. So that's what all the students did. So I was always just Garvey all the time. And that pretty much stuck, I guess. Kind of boring. So now I want a cool nickname. Hicksie
and Garvey.
Sorry?
Hicksie and Garvey.
Flanger and Garv.
Flanger and Garv.
Welcome to the Flanger and Garv show. Coming at you with a nice cold can of Coke. Oh, yeah. Anyway, as for my answer, I'm going to say my favorite nickname is the one that Logan uses for pretty much anyone, and that's Bub. It'll just be some, you know... If he's just fighting someone, Wolverine will just call him Bub in the middle of the fight. Or if it's just a friend, it'll be Bub. Or if it's someone on the street, it'll be Bub. It's kind of like... If it's a baby, he'll call it Bub.
Bub.
It's almost like his version of Old Mate that is kind of used in Australia here.
It's like, dude.
Dude, yeah, like dude. But yeah, I just love that he just uses it for anyone and everyone. You know, it's kind of cool. So it's not his own nickname, but it's just... It's something he uses for everyone else, which is cool. It's like he just doesn't give a crap about them, so they're just a bub. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good answer.
Thanks. I think we all did well this week. Yeah.
We did. Pretty good. Anyway, that's probably it for the show. If you want to get in touch with us on Twitter, we've got at WFDpod. You can talk to Wilfred, the sentient show account there. Send us an email. You can be like Dr. Ange, not his real name, at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. There's the Facebook page. You could be like Jacob Edwards. Be just like him. Mike, what are we doing next?
Next week on the show, we are going to be looking at the Flex Mentallo miniseries. Yes. And we might have a special guest joining us.
Yep.
Maybe.
Hope so.
Yep. We'll see. You're here. Maybe. Kind of, sort of. Okay. Yeah, that's what we're doing next week. in terms of doom splaining. What about a question for next week, Paul? Do we have one of those?
Call me Flanger. we want to ask people, what's the comic you lend out the most?
Oh, that's going to be easy.
Oh, is it? Mm. Hmm, okay. Save it for next week.
I will. Tune in next week, guys.
Save it, Garvey.
All right, Flanger, I will. Okay, let's sign off there, Flanger, because I think we're getting a bit silly. It's getting a bit late. Thanks, everyone, for joining us once again, and we will catch you next week for more Waiting for Doom. Flanger and Garves out. Garves, that was my nickname.
Garves.
Garves, which is still just a shortened form of Garvey, but yeah. Great difference. Sweet. Anyway. All right. Thanks, guys. See ya.
Bye.